What's going on, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Designated Players Podcast. This is episode 25. That is a quarter of a century. That is ridiculous. We are keep going. Thank you guys so much for all the support recently. We are joined with a very special guest, JR from Defenders of the Bank Podcast. Say hello.
What's happening, guys? Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. We are very excited. We grabbed him at the right time, the week after the LA Derby, El Tráfico, however anybody would like to call it, one of the greatest games of the weekend. We are going to recap that along with Vancouver, San Jose, Montreal, Toronto, Sporting KC, Colorado, and we'll give you our previews and predictions for the rest of the games that were not covered by myself and Connor over the last 2 days. But before we do any of that, as we always do, scarf of the week, and we're going to send it over to the biggest scarf collector in LAFC, the scarf himself. JR, go ahead. What are you rocking today?
Yeah, so this one is called the Golasso scarf. It's every time we score a Golasso, we hold this up. It's pretty sweet. And a small connection to it in that I designed it for the team. Very they nice. Sold it in their team stores. And this was my, they actually surprised me in the, so on the back, there's a little cloud area that's supposed to represent our flares that we hold up. And of course, I can't find it now because, you know, we're live and everything. But there, oh, there we go. I don't know if you can tell, but it says my name right there. It says JR.
That's so cool.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so I designed this one. So a little bit of a favoritism here. My favorite scarf in my collection is this one, the Golasso scarf.
Very, very nice. How many do you have total? I know you were saying around 100, maybe more.
Yeah, I believe I'm at 107 different LAFC scarves right now. And that's all official. Like, these aren't out in the parking lot bootleg scarves or anything like that. These are all official scarves. I have a couple sweet bootleg ones too. Don't get me wrong. I love a good bootleg scarf. But 107 since they started making scarves. The first one, I guess, technically 2015 or 16. So
I will say that is 106 more than one of the people on the podcast with us, and it's not me.
Gotcha. Not me either.
It looks like he's wearing his only scarf then. That's awesome.
He is. Yeah. Connor, would you like to show it off for our new guest?
Yeah, whenever we have a guest on, that's the only time I get to show it off, because there's no point in me showing it every week to Andrew and Adam. But it's an Atlanta scarf from their first season, inaugural season, and it's the only one I have because Atlanta's my only love in MLS. But I also do have if we are going with random kit Mondays, I do have a Spain kit on. I don't know if you can see it.
Nice. There you go. Yeah, I wore this just for you guys. I've got my 2018 MLS All-Star kit on for you guys. So the no name on the back, because I couldn't decide whether I wanted Vela or Simon from our first ever All-Stars. Probably would pick Simon now, actually, not Vela, because I think Vela will have, I don't know, about 7 or 8 more of these coming, hopefully.
Oh, yeah, for future. Sure.
So easily. That's only Simon's only All-Star game for us. So
yeah. All right, Adam, what are you rocking today?
So I can't remember if I wore this last week. They're kind of starting to just blend together, but let me flip that around. I went with the All for One TFC scarf in honor of their win. And in honor of Random Kit Monday, no, Andrew, no, Connor, it is not a Dom Dwyer scarf. No, it is not a Chris Wondolowski scarf. Can anyone tell me who wore number 9?
Aaron Johansson. Yes, that's right. We talked about
this. Oh, my goodness.
Yep. The Icelandic wonder kid who never, ever played for the U.S. like more than twice.
That is a random USA kit right there. That's pretty solid.
So Big Cone over there rocks Dom Dwyer on his USA kit.
Yeah.
Oof.
I do not have one yet, and I feel like I'm missing out. I think I need to go out and grab like a Julian Green or like Novakovic. How do we pronounce his name last time?
I call him like
Novakovic.
Novakovic.
Oh, yeah. Well, we just called him Djokovic.
I call him Djokovic.
But I think I need to grab one of those to say this guy's got tons of hype and he'll never step foot on the field for this team. I gotta join the hype.
So the
it's got to be a striker too.
Yes.
So the reason I chose this combo is the plea to get Ayo Akinola to join the U.S. team.
Yes, please.
So
yeah,
I'm here for the Akinola bandwagon.
Listen, I'm all here for hype about players playing well for 2 games and then joining the national team.
That's what this team is based off of.
Didn't Dwyer do that? He had one good like Gold Cup. We're like, everybody throw him in our Gold Cup squad.
That's why I got the jersey, because he switched to the U.S., came in for the Gold Cup, did well, and then I was like, oh, I'm hyped.
Mm-hmm. That's what
I mean. Akinola is clearly replacing Altidore, right? Like, that's it.
He's mini Altidore. I tweeted that the other day. I go, this kid is literally Altidore's little brother.
Right.
He plays the exact same way. And if he grows to be a little bit, I don't even know. I feel like he's just missing something. I think Josie's just bigger, like taller, but he's got something else. He's quicker and cuts in behind. I'm excited.
Our national team is based off
the kid had one goal, right?
Yeah.
The kid had one goal before this tournament, right?
Yeah. So and now he's got five.
Yeah. Pretty great.
Yeah. He's not too bad. Not too bad.
Our national team is based off of two good games and everyone hypes you up and then you either do stuff or you fade into nothingness.
Yeah. Well, it's also based on nepotism, right? We got Greg Berhalter and every other Berhalter that's ever been a Berhalter.
So I tried to think of another national team where their national coach coaches in that country as a club team, and I couldn't do it.
I guess, didn't Bob coach, like, Egypt and a club team in Egypt for, like, 2 seconds?
Something like that.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't see, like, Didier Deschamps coaching PSG.
Definitely a weird one. In honor of so, JR, I don't know if you know this or not, but I will have a Defender of the Bank scarf and an LAFC scarf at some point because what I'm doing is building a scarf wall of anybody and everybody who interviews with us or collaborates with us or stuff like that.
Love that.
So I'm going to have eventually, actually, on the other side of this computer right now, I'm going to have – it's a blank wall. I'm probably going to hang them all up over there so it becomes my podcast area. But in honor of the newest one that I just got, repping our boys out in Sacramento, the Sactown FC scarf came in this week, and it is an absolute flyer. It is so nicely designed. It's very, very nice. I really love it. Shout out to the guys over there, Luis, and others. And it's a great design. You guys did a really great job, and I'm hoping I can get even more. Do you have a Defender of the Bank scarf that you prefer? I see you got one hanging up there.
Yeah, so this is our only scarf that we make. So I prefer this one so far, definitely.
Right.
We do have another one in the works, but I've got plenty of these for you that I can make sure we get out to you. And I'll have a feeling I have a couple of LAFC scarves I can send you out as well. So I got you covered.
Oh, yeah, we'll have to take a look at that. I know I've already got two in so far. I've got Forward Madison and I've got Sacktown. My soccer coach played for Bolton Wanderers U18.
Nice.
He was a huge Bolton fan, so I've got a Bolton scarf coming in. He interviewed with us a couple of weeks back when we first started shutdown, and we're going to continue to build on from there. So,
dude, and by the way, moment of silence for Sacktown, right? Having to push everything back a year. I mean, that was brutal. That fan base, I've been up, was it Papa Murphy Stadium, right?
Yeah.
That is it's a great location, super passionate fan base too. Sacramento, they are ready. They're ready for their close-up with Major League Soccer. They gave us a game when we played them in Open Cup. We won 3-2, and we were on our heels the whole time. Great fan base, great culture up there. It's going to be a lot of fun when they get to MLS, and maybe San Jose will have a game they care about.
Yeah. And I had reached out to them, you know, through the Twitter sphere and, you know, gave our condolences after we saw the news, and they're taking it with heads up and bright spirits. They are, you know, it's a setback, but we're kind of going to come back stronger. We're going to be really strong. We're going to come back. We're going to be ready, even more ready than we would have been before. And that's the right attitude to go about it. So I'm excited. It's a little sad because they're not going to join when they should, but excited for when they do eventually step in and start giving people some games.
Sure. I mean, hey, it happened to us with LAFC, right? We got pushed back a year. Everybody else has been pushed back a year too. So I think it'll be good.
Yeah, they'll be all right.
It's interesting. It's weird that they pushed – I mean, granted, they pushed everyone back, but the teams that have, I mean, zero framework, so you look at the Charlottes or the St. Louis – I mean, St. Louis probably does, but Charlotte's the big example. Why not push them back and have Sacktown move up a year? I mean, I'm sure there are other logistical reasons that I don't know about, but
I'm sure it has to do with not knowing the revenue that you're going to have to spread around either and what you'll be able to do to get a club up and going. Because right now it's got to be tough, right? Nobody knows what's going on with any sport, let alone MLS. And MLS is so tied to their TV revenue and everything. So it's got to be tough.
And that there's definitely a reason they put people in place for when they did. You know, if Sacramento is ready a year and a half ago to step in, they would have just given it to him right then. But the reason they put him at 2022 was for a reason. Maybe we don't know it, but there was definitely a reason behind it. So, you know, like I said, excited for when they do join it, but heart hurts a little bit because it'll be a little bit longer than expected. But if we continue to talk about, I know you want to add one more thing, Adam?
Yeah, before, just because JR just brought it up. This is kind of my plea to MLS and to anyone who's listening. Like JR said, you know, MLS is very tied to their TV revenue. It's you know, what brings in the most money. Considering we're the only, I know baseball is just starting to come back, but we were the only, you know, major sport on TV. For the love of God, please stop streaming your games on Twitter. It drives me up the wall. I don't want to do it. Just put the games on TV like normal people. I know you can probably reach more fans that way, but.
Watch, when you guys are on episode like 100, you're going to play this back, whatever it is, like a year from now or so. And it's going to be, oh man, all the games are on Twitter now. Everybody's watching it on Twitter. It's going to be one of those platforms, man. I'm telling you that I'm the same way though. I don't sit down and watch a game on Twitter. I like to watch it on television. Mm-hmm. I even, you know, I'll cast from my phone, whatever it might be. Like I'll make sure I do it that way. I can say I have not watched the game on Twitter myself.
So. I forget which game on, and the feed kept cutting out. I had the live chat going up the whole time. Even when I had it turned off, it would just like pop back up. I was like, mm-hmm. This is not the way I want to watch this game.
I think it's a good idea on paper to get it out to more people, but the logistics behind it are so poor.
I mean, that's just MLS in a nutshell. Good idea, poor execution.
No questions there. Speaking of things that were not boring, we had four phenomenal games this week. Vancouver, San Jose, Montreal, Toronto, SKC, Colorado, and of course, LAFC, LA Galaxy. I'm going to let Adam start off with a game that I thought was going to be one of maybe two flyers at the end of it. Vancouver, San Jose. Adam, break down kind of what you saw, the biggest events of the game, if you can fit it all within a 3-hour time span, because my goodness, there was so much going on in this one.
Yeah. So before I start, Andrew, do you have anything you want to say to me before I talk about this Vancouver game?
Nothing
about me predicting Ali Adnan's going to score.
No,
making
not a
jokes
word.
About why he's playing at left back when he's clearly their striker.
Not a word.
Fine. So Andrew and I were talking about this game before it kicked off. You know, joking, banter aside, I said that it's weird having their best player play left back. And what does he do 10 minutes into the game? Ronaldo chops playing left wing, curls it far post with his right foot, 1-0 Vancouver. Beautiful stuff. Ali Adnan for Ballon d'Or, even though it got canceled this year. Yeah, this game was wild. This is the way I kind of envision Vancouver playing, because the last game they played, it was 2 hours of my life I will never get back.
Yep.
This is, I mean, the conceding four goals isn't necessarily a great shout. I mean, you kind of expect their back line to do a little bit better, but that's the kind of high tempo, really good soccer we want to see from these teams. This game was wild. Just back and forth, late winners. Wondolowski scoring again like he always does.
Can we talk about that goal before you continue? The fact that he's going to get a goal because a ball accidentally skimmed off his head and the goalkeeper forgot how to use his hands.
That's pretty much his specialty.
You do have to mark Chris Wondolowski at some point in the box too, though. Yeah. I mean, he had nobody within 5 yards of him.
Twice. That happened today or yesterday too. The same thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was talking with some people on Twitter during their last game, and can anyone tell me what Vancouver's biggest strength is? And this is a genuine question. Can anyone tell me what's the best part of that Vancouver team? Because I have no idea.
Back. The left back.
Other than Ali Adnan.
They used to have Alphonso Davies. Does that count? Is that good? Is that not?
They're known in the world. I'm okay with that.
I mean, I think Mark Dos Santos, obviously we have a little bit of love here for Mark Dos Santos. He was one of our former assistant coaches and, you know, knows how to play us pretty well too. I mean, he grinded a game down 1-0 that he beat us. And I think they are on the right track with him as coach, but I think we're going to see a little bit over the next couple of seasons if he can create a system, right? Because you've got Bruce Arena, Bob Bradley, so many of these great coaches, they have systems. And if Mark Dos Santos can prove he's got a system, whether it's – it almost looks like a hybrid of kind of Portland and Seattle, maybe up there in Cascadia, he's kind of taking from what he knows. You know, Portland likes to grind games out. They're very physical. Kind of Seattle, a little less physical, a little more finesse, but a little nice marrying of the two, which I think is great. I don't think he's got the horses yet in Vancouver to make things go. And then what? They lost, what, Cavallini and a bunch of other people right before this? So – I don't look at this as any indication of what they're going to look like if we have a season after this, but I think what we're seeing, those guys look pretty solid considering they have so many holes in their moving parts right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I mean, yes, like you said, they're missing, I don't know how many probably of their starting lineup, but it's just a weird vibe I get from their team. So like they're conceding, you know, 3-4 goals a game. So you can't say the back line's doing that well, even though Kerpow is fantastic, and I hope, however, whatever injury he got last game, you know, he's back for.
Oh no, he's not.
No,
he broke something. They were cutting his glove off. He couldn't move. It didn't look good at all.
Okay, yeah, fair. The midfield 4-3. I don't know how they play. They change consistently throughout the game. Has some bright spots. I mean, Mbam Wang is probably their best midfielder, and then Andrew and Connor know how much I love Jordi Reyna.
Stop it.
I mean, in fairness, and Andrew and I were talking about it mid-game, but Ali Anand had the first. Jordi Reyna should have had the second. I don't know. That was peak MLS. San Jose have a corner. They send 15 guys into the box, including the goalie for some reason, 20 minutes of the game. Vancouver counterattack. Jordi Reyna should just walk the ball into the goal. It scuffs a shot, hits the defender, rolls into the back of the net for an own goal. I could not tell you what that was, but peak MLS.
It was 2020 in a goal. That's what 2020 was in one goal.
That was the biggest mess of a 10-second like counterattack I've ever seen. I mean, San Jose outshot them 30-7.
22 corners.
Yeah. Like, name another game where the other team has 22 corners.
Well, I can. It's a record, so there
that's,
is none.
Yeah. That's unbelievable. But I'll give it to Vancouver. You know, 7 shots on target, 3 goals. So
clinical.
Yeah. I mean, we can have 100 shots. If you don't make them, doesn't matter how many you get.
There were a couple gifts in there, though. Some easy ones that we're not going to miss.
Yeah.
At Daniel Vega being awful.
Yeah, Daniel Vega is yeah.
He is easily one of my least favorite goalkeepers in this league. Coming from a goalkeeper, that's a lot.
And you get our friends at Sacktown kind of told us about San Jose beforehand, and I think they're starting to weirdly find their stride now. They didn't start the first two games before this tournament all that well, but I think they're slowly starting to find their rhythm, and who knows how far they can go in this now.
I mean, they've got clean sheets in the last two, right? So they're doing something right. And I like Jackson Yule too. He's another one that he could be one of those up and comers on the U.S. men's national team. Someone who's fun to watch. Cause I like his pace. I like his movement, and he doesn't make those typical MLS runs where you stay in your lane, you run your line. It was almost, you know, not to bring it back to the first Chicha goal, right? Where Chicha cuts across the box and makes that run that MLS players don't make. I see Jackson Ewell making a lot of those runs too. So he's fun to watch.
Yeah, he's definitely learning off of Wando, because Wando has that type of movement too. He's very, very smart in the box.
Definitely.
Very interested to see what happens if he starts getting time around players better than he is right now, because you've got a lot of people who are almost forcing him to play a way that he shouldn't be playing. And I'd love to see him somewhere with Atlanta or LAFC where you've got players who love making these crisscross runs diagonal, how he can intertwine with them. But alas, that probably won't be happening anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, he has the Christian Espinozas, he has the Wandos. You know, he has some talent around him. It's just whether or not he can continue to grow and play off those guys.
But yeah, so Shea Salinas' wonder goal, probably going to win goal of the week, I would hope.
Probably.
Didn't they give it to Frankie Amaya, or was that last week's?
Give that to Frankie Amaya? That'd be criminal if they gave it to Frankie Amaya.
Pretty sure Frankie Amaya got goal of the week because I don't know if you know this, Cincinnati won a game.
I was about to say that's why
against
extra
who?
Bonus points because they not only scored a goal, but right, they won a game.
Well, guess what? They're probably going to win this week too. So
I can't wait. I want those teams, the Orlandos, the FC Cincinnati's, the Colorado. Well, not so much Colorado, right? But I want these teams to do well. I want, because everyone's watching this, right? Like, you want your product, as MLS is, you want your product to look good. And when you are, like you mentioned it, right? Other than NWSL, we're the only league going right now in major league, in North American professional sports. So when we're on television, I want us to look good. And I can't say I've ever seen FC Cincinnati look good. So at least they had their moment, right? Frankie Amaya, number one pick overall, kid out of UCLA here. I mean, it's really cool to see him take his shot and have his moment and have that be. And that's a, I mean, let's be honest, Atlanta, they're not Atlanta, right? They don't have Joseph. They're a mess all over the field right now. But that's a huge win for FC Cincinnati. So happy for that kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was about to say that you were going to be good friends with Adam here, because Adam has a very special spot for FC Cincinnati, but you said you're very happy for them, so I don't know if you guys are going to blend very well. But that's okay.
No. Broken clocks twice a day.
There right. you go.
So. Right.
Blind squirrels find acorns.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, no, I think it's just wild stuff. I remember watching this game, and I was trying to keep up with the live tweets, and I couldn't. Everything was just going bang, bang, bang. Another game that was very much like that, the Canadian Classique, Montreal versus Toronto, red versus blue. Connor, tell me what you thought about this game.
First, before we do that, gentlemen, I need to give you guys some time because you have some apologizing to do to a certain fan base, so I will give you the time here to get that off your chest.
We have one more game, right?
I would say, yeah, we don't have any apologizing. We have some questions to ask of these Montreal supporters who we backed with blind faith.
Well, no, first we didn't. First we said they were terrible.
You're right.
Got yelled at by the fan base.
Backed them.
Then we backed them, and then they still are terrible.
So, and granted, they're not terrible. They're just not winning. Right. They're looking okay, but they're not winning. I am upset. I'm angry. I feel hoodwinked, bamboozled, insert any other word here. And if I keep talking, I might throw something. So Connor, continue.
I'm glad you can get that off your chest. And I would like to say to our guest that I was the only one that didn't change my opinion on them, and I did not back them, and I was correct.
Because you're a hater.
I'm not a hater. I'm just right. And we'll find out later when we talk about our prediction scores, and you'll see that I'm doing very well compared to the other two. So usually I'm pretty good about this stuff. I feel like I've been talking too much about myself. Let's talk about Montreal, Toronto. And this game was pretty much just a showcase for how good Akinola is. And that's like the best way I could put it. I mean, Montreal, like you said, obviously parts of their game are looking pretty okay, and then parts are looking awful. I think defensively they look bad. I believe they had Wanyama as a center back that game, right?
They played Wanyama as a true number center back, yeah.
Yeah, and defensively they looked slow, and obviously when you give up four goals, it's not going to be a good look on your defense. But the attack wasn't terrible. I feel like the attack was there. I mean, you got three goals. In most cases, that's enough goals to win you a game. But Henry has to figure something out defensively. And it's funny because I feel like in the beginning of the season, before the pandemic hit, that was their thing. Is like they were pretty solid defensively. Like you sat back pretty deep, you defended pretty well, and you hit a couple times on the counter, and it worked for them. But now things after the pandemic don't seem to be going that way. But on the Toronto side of things, I know they won the game, but it didn't look great for them either. Same thing defensively. I thought Omar Gonzalez looked slow. He was getting beat in behind and giving Montreal these opportunities to score, which they did. And then Mavinga was trying to clean up some of the messes for Gonzalez when he gets beat, like the one where he gave away the penalty and he just wiped out the Montreal player. And it's not like the guys on the bench have been a lot better for Toronto either. I know Simon and Zabaleta have not been great for them. So they got to get something together defensively, because if they keep playing like this, they're not going to make it through. Despite how many goals Akinola could score, he can't and as great as Pozuelo is behind him, I mean, eventually your luck is gonna run out in terms of scoring, and then you're gonna need the defense to come through, and they can't be giving up three goals every game, because it was three this game, and then it was two against DC where they were up, man, might add. So they got to figure things out there, but in the end, they get the win, important 3 points, so they can take that momentum into their next game and hopefully try to, for their own sake, hopefully try to clinch things up and get the one seed in the group.
So here's the only thing I'm going to say about that. I thought that was a decent rundown, but I feel like you missed the whole point of the intro to all this reaction. You just said Akinola is going to stop scoring at some point. He is the new USMNT hero. That will never happen. You need to figure out.
We just talked about this in the beginning. They do well for two games, and then stop.
No, no, no. But you're not allowed to say that. It just happened. You can't believe it. It just happens.
So if I believe it, it won't happen, is what you're saying?
No.
Okay.
Wild.
I hope he doesn't score. It's honestly great to watch. I like seeing him do well. Hopefully he does go for the U.S., but even if he doesn't, I still hope he's banging in goals, despite the fact that he's ruining my Zardes shout for Golden Boot, but that's all right.
He would be super dangerous with Kyle Larin up top in Canada with all the young players that have come through that system. He would make that team very, very good and a big problem coming up in the future. But
smart decision is you go Canada right now.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Guaranteed game time, probably.
He'll play a ton for Canada right now. And I think we're about to see a system change. I don't know how much longer we can have Berhalter manning the sidelines for the men's national team. So Canada is going to be the CONCACAF team to, I think, show out. Yeah. In this next World Cup. I mean, obviously, you've got all the hype around Davies, but you mentioned Kyle Larin. You've got a lot of young guys that are coming up for Canada. And now, I mean, Akinola wasn't even on the radar, I don't think, before this. And now Canada's got to be looking strong at least a bench striker option, a guy that can get you some wiggle on the field if you need it. So
the thing that I see Canada as right now is very much like Belgium in 2014. Belgium in 2014 were everybody's big pick to be good. They were young. They were talented. They had a whole bunch of stuff. And they fell flat. To me, I think Canada needs one more cycle before all those players come from good and high potential, or like young and high potential, to good. So I think you'll see them in when World Cup comes to us. I think they're going to be a problem. I think this cycle,
2026.
Yeah, I think this cycle might be. We have some time off, but I think very near future in the football world, they're going to be a problem.
One more point before we move on. And I texted Andrew this after this game, but this is the Romel Kyoto I want to see. First game, he may as well not have been on the field because he did nothing. I think he was trying to do the same things he did against Toronto that first game, and they just weren't working. He continuously drifted out to the left and would whip balls in, and there would be no one there because he's one of their strikers. This time he did it, and the midfielders and the I forget who else was up top, Rudy, to start, was actually making runs in the box for him to cross to. So, you know, he looked a lot better. Obviously, he grabbed one of their goals, but I was very impressed with him this game.
He looked fast. He was doing well at beating Gonzalez and getting him behind.
Gonzalez is a step slow. That guy.
I was gonna say my grandma can run faster.
I've seen a lot of Omar Gonzalez over the last 10 years or so here in Los Angeles, and I've always felt he plays stiff. He plays too upright. He's got no natural angle to his runs at all. And unfortunately now, and you mentioned, I mean, Simon and Zabaleta both back there on the bench. There's a reason why they're on the bench. They're just as rigid. I don't think they've got a lot there on that back line. I'm not a big fan of Omar.
Mm-hmm. I would say the one issue I have with Montreal is actually with Thierry Henry, where we watched this game and it was very clear what their game plan was. Sit back, absorb pressure, hit him on a counter with fast players. He comes into the press conference after the game and goes, yeah, I thought we did really well building up the play, breaking through the lines and creating chances on our own, not just through counters, but actually playing the ball and playing soccer. And I go, if that's what you took out of that game, you're in trouble because that's not what happened. So I'm very interested to see if and when he makes any changes, because the game plan is good, but you have to have players who are committed to it. And we spoke about this off air, where if you're going to be an absorb pressure and play, great, be that way. But make sure you got everybody on the same page. So you're not playing 1v4 every time you attack.
Yeah, I mean, this was a very interesting team he picked, not just the 11, but the players on the bench as well. It was a lot of younger guys, which, I mean, granted, we're seeing a lot of in this tournament, so it's been good. The extra bench spots and the extra substitutions means you've seen some of these guys that may not have gotten game time. Mm-hmm. But one of the subs he made was bringing on Rod Fanny at 50 years old. So I can't think of a game situation, especially when you're chasing a scoreline, where that's the answer.
Grant, I don't know who he has on the bench that could have come in the formation he was playing, right?
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
And I don't know if he was ready to change formation at that point, because they weren't getting blown out. They still were creating counterattack chances. Right. So it's take 20, catch 22 there. But
right. But again, you're trying to counter, and you're putting Rod Fanny on.
Dump it, baby.
Not exactly the speedy counterattack you'd want.
Yeah, lots of question marks on that one, but it will be an interesting one for sure to see how they rebound from that and take on DCU. Are we going to jump over to the game that I am labeling absolute peak MLS football? Because that's exactly what it was. This is what I thought was going to be the cap on what was our crazy game of the week. I was wrong, clearly. Timilialis SKC takes on Colorado that started off red hot and just couldn't find a win in this tournament. You get Acosta, who opens up the scoring with a screamer, and then the rest of the half is just kind of like, eh, whatever, right? And all hell breaks loose. Danny Wilson gets a straight red for dog, so, which I think is a right – it was a right call. I don't have too much of an issue with that one. Shelton levels directly after that. And then VAR comes in and calls this PK off a handball. Could you call it? Maybe yes or no. I would have been okay either way had they not done it, because I don't think he knew much about it. But I think the new rule is if it hits your hand, you're in the box, it's a penalty no matter what, which kind of sucks because he wasn't intentionally putting his hand up there. He was going to block his face. It caught him in the hand, and it barely caught it. It caught him just a little bit. Pulido scores to go 2-1. 2 minutes after that, Jack Price goes and says something about the ref's mom or something and gets sent off. And then Colorado go down to 9. Then John Lewis out of nowhere levels, and you're thinking this one's done. Colorado with 9 men, scrape out a point. And then USMNT cult hero Graham Zusi at right back comes up and scores a jammy deflection in the 91st minute to win it. If that doesn't scream MLS, I don't know what league you've been watching, because that's exactly how these types of games go. Wild stuff happens. A team that shouldn't be in it gets level, and then they get screwed over by some deflection or a bad referee call or something. Phenomenal game. Loved it. Really, really great. But I think this was retribution for the poor red card that Tim Melia was given last week. And I know Adam is going to try and defend something because he's wrong. And good. See, he's learned his ways. Definitely not a red against Tim Melia. Really thought it was harsh. And I think the penalty, the VAR penalty was harsh. I think the red was probably the right call. And I think that the 9 men probably was retribution for that poor red card. I don't know. A little bit of justice there, but I don't think we've seen the peak of what SKC can be. They were good against Minnesota, and then they got that red card and got broken apart because Richard Sanchez. That's it.
He is the worst goalie in Major League Soccer, by the
way. That's accurate. That terrible. We talked about Daniel Vega, but Richard Sanchez is like up there.
It's a competition.
I want to see the mustache. Don't get me wrong. Like, that is the highlight of this tournament so far. It's dirty and wonderful all at the same time. But watching him when he came in from Ilya after the red,
it was awful.
It was like they had put like a shirt on a fan and said, yeah, all right, get out there, have a good time. And he looked somehow worse, I feel like, in the next, like in that match against Colorado. I don't understand. How does that man have a contract to be a goalie in Major League Soccer? That's terrible.
He was a starter for Chicago last year. After they were doing their goalkeeper rotation, he started like 5 or 6 games for them.
Yeah, he is awful.
Very, very poor. And somehow he picked up a win. So he could say he won a game in MLS. Good for him.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen peak, right? We haven't seen what SKC can truly be. you know, then they get this game in game two, and you get a couple of reds, and you're like, okay, so they should beat up on this nine-man team. And they concede to Colorado, who have nine men. And it wasn't like a jammy goal. Colorado broke them down with nine men. That's awful. So I like SKC. I like a lot of what they've got going on for them. But I'm worried that the fact that, one, we still haven't seen them at their best, and two, when they had the upper hand, they got picked apart. It's worrying. Granted, they had Sanchez in goal, so we'll put a little asterisk next to that. But I'm a little worried on that side. Colorado, I think, is okay. They haven't performed well in the tournament. They showed great heart to get back into it, nine men, and I think they were really unlucky to lose it. I thought they did enough to get at least a point in that game, and I think they're going to be fine going back to the regular season. I know they don't have a great showing in this tournament, but I think going back to it, I think they'll be okay. I picked them to go really, do really well in this tournament, and it didn't pan out. Fine, whatever. I'm not worried in the slightest about when, if and when we get back to the league. I'm not worried in the slightest. SKC, on the other hand, not so sure. I think Peter Vermees has a lot to deal with back there. I think all that back line is kind of just, they're getting run down. We talk about it a lot, this SKC team. They've had the same starting 11 for like 9 years outside of like two players. So I think it's something they need to really look at, because I think they're just getting worn down. I think they're tired. I think they're older, they're slower, and they're just getting beat down. So going back in the regular season, I think SKC are going to struggle a little bit more than Colorado. Again, this is MLS. Who knows? But
that group, yeah. Very open.
I think that there are two types of teams in this tournament, right? There are teams that are using this tournament to see what they have from their young guys, to try different things out in formations, to experiment a little bit, right? And I think that's Colorado, personally. I think Colorado, they have so much turnover over the last couple of years. I mean, to think about who they brought on that was part of the, 22 or 23, not the 18 right now, right? Mm-hmm. They're bringing in Kai Kamara. They're bringing in Austin Trusty. They're bringing in Jonathan Lewis. They didn't even bring in our MLS Rookie of the Year last year, Shinashiki, right? They've got a lot of talent that isn't even playing. And I think they're just trying to see what things look like out there between Keegan Rosenberry and Lalas Abubakar. You know, these guys are Sam Vines, who somehow keeps making national team appearances. I don't know what's going on there, but I think they're a team with a lot of talent, but I don't think they ever came in my opinion, to try to win the COVID Cup. I think they're trying to play things out and see what things look like. Whereas you can legitimately make the case that SKC is trying to win these games and try to win this tournament. And if anything, Alan Pulido looks great, right? Like, he's poaching goals, he's doing good things, and he seems to be like a great DP signing for that squad. And I didn't know that he would translate as well to SKC and what they do. But I think it's a classic match too of what are the teams trying to do with these three games that they know they have, and then go from there. And I think Colorado, honestly, I don't think they're trying to win the thing. I think they're trying to figure themselves out on the fly here. And like you just mentioned, that was a great great observation. I think Sporting is going to try and figure it out during the regular season, and they're just trying to win this cup.
I took a lot out of that, and I enjoyed it. Like you said, it was great peak MLS soccer. But if you're looking at it in a long-term situation, maybe a little bit worried that your back line is conceding to nine men in a, you know, when you should just be possessing the ball and not letting him touch it. But to each their own. There's still one more great game we can talk about, and I'm going to leave that to you, JR. LAFC, LA Galaxy, El Tráfico, LA Derby. Take it away and just give us everything from a fan's point of view.
Yeah, so in a nod to Rage Against the Machine, the Battle of Los Angeles, right? That's it's funny. We have, you know, our 3252, who you guys might know is our big fan base in the North End. Not a big fan of El Tráfico. So it's one of those things that a focus group kind of came up with, and now our biggest fan base doesn't like it. So we roll with the Battle of Los Angeles, or as we like to say on our podcast, Defenders of the Bank, the 110 Collision. That's another fun one because it's all about the freeway there. Cool. But either way, look, that's the rivalry that's never disappointed so far in the seven games. I think we had a 1-1 match like our fourth game in, and that was the only one where we didn't have absolute fireworks. And coming into this tournament, I didn't know what to expect because no Carlos Vela and no Zlatan Ibrahimovic So you didn't have your natural villain on the other side. And look, Chicha, as much as he's a villain, I don't think a lot of people villainize him nearly as much as they did Zlatan, right? Especially with a lot of Mexican national team fans here in Los Angeles, they love themselves some Chicha. So it was going to be really interesting to see how it played out. And unfortunately, right before the derby, we get the news. I think it was a torn skirt or whatever was wrong with Chicha, where, you know, he was out now, and unfortunately he's out for the rest of the tournament, which is unfortunate. 2 to 4 weeks, big injury there for Carson. But I was disappointed because we didn't get to see them at full strength. We knew coming in they wouldn't see us at full strength. I think to know Jonathan Dos Santos for that squad really, really hurts Carson. So, you know, the big change for us that we made, and this is a thing, I don't know how heavily you guys follow LAFC, but our goalkeeper situation from minute one of our franchise has been very interesting. It was supposed to be Buba Lopez to be our starter in the start of 2018. He could never stay healthy. So Tyler Miller, who had started like 6 total games in his MLS career, for Tacoma, I think before that, and started a couple Open Cup games for the Sounders, you know, he stepped in and I thought he played really, really well in 2018. Our fan base, not so much. They're not big fans of Tyler Miller, which I couldn't really understand. I was on Team Tyler from the beginning. They wanted Buba or they wanted somebody different. And then we bring in Pablo Cisniega and all of a sudden the fan base just clamors for Pablo every single time they can. And unfortunately, when Tyler got sent to national team camp and was unused, I mean, not even as a tackling dummy or someone to carry the water, he just sat and sat for that entire 3-week camp. And he came back and he lost not just his starting spot, but he lost that game fitness. He lost that pace. He lost what you need as a keeper to really feel like you're in the flow. And so we had Pablo finish out the season for us. And then we signed Kenneth Vermeer in the offseason. And the big switch for us right before this match, Kenneth Vermeer did not start in goal for us, who he had been our starter for the first couple matches of the regular season. And obviously for the first match, the 3-3 kind of lackluster effort by LAFC's back line against Houston. So we start Pablo and our fan base, you know, they didn't like Kenneth Vermeer. They wanted to see Pablo. I'm not so sure Pablo's shown anything over the course of his like 9 games that he's played for us, but look, when you're on the back line for a derby win that was this big, the tale of two halves, 6-2. First half, I mean, our back line, when you trade Walker Zimmerman, and I know people can be split on Walker Zimmerman, right? I think he's a great leader. I've been able to watch him play for the last couple seasons for us, and then unfortunately to watch him flourish for both of Nashville's games. By the way, has anybody said how Major League Soccer is planning on making up 3 regular season games for Dallas and for Nashville? Like,
Still trying to figure that out.
How is that going to – I'm looking at the table, right? And it was like games played, 4-5, 4-5, 2. Like, what is going to happen there with Dallas and Nashville? But, either way, there's no plan for any of this stuff because I don't even think they think there's going to be a season.
I think they're done after this.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation to begin with. But to see what Walker has been able to do, first goal in Nashville history, and look, it's not an even trade when you're bringing – I love Dayon. Dayon is a really nice guy. He's filled in really well. He's 35 years old. Dayon Yakovic is not your answer over 37 games in the course of a Major League Soccer season. And when you disrupt a back line that had improved so much from 2018 to 2019, to see that first goal, I don't know what Latif Blessing was doing in the middle of 3 other defenders for us, and that ball ricochets off his back heel. And, of course, own goal, we go down early, and all of us in the chat room, all of us in the fan base, we're thinking, oh, God, here we go again. This is a very LAFC start, not just for this tournament, but against Carson. And the player who I felt was the best player in Major League Soccer over those first couple games, and especially in our matches against León when we played them in the CONCACAF Champions League, Diego Rossi, the guy is special. I mean, it came out today, Leipzig wants Diego Rossi, and LAFC doesn't want to spend or doesn't want to sell him for less than $18 million. So I like that. You know, and Tyler Adams, you know, they got a good pipeline there. But I don't know if he's an $18 million guy. I hope that's what they're saying in the media so that we can sell him for maybe 14 or 15. But, you know, John Thorrington has said from the beginning, we are a seller's club, right? So I'm fully expecting, unfortunately, Diego Rossi to go. And I really need Edward Atuesta to play worse because he's just looking better and better in the midfield. I think he's going to go as well. But you had that Rossi PK, which wasn't a little soft on BWP's part. Look, I have gotten to see Bradley Wright Phillips now play for 2 total games. And he reminds me of the guy down at the YMCA who's got the knee brace on, who's got the short shorts, the Chuck Taylors. And all of a sudden you look down and he has 30 points and 15 rebounds and you've been elbowed in the side of the head four times. Like, how does that guy not score every game with those cheeky runs that he makes? I love Bradley Wright Phillips. And that little – I don't know if it was a flop because it's Perry Kitchen. He's terrible. So it could have been all Perry Kitchen. But to see that – to see Bradley Wright Phillips go down to earn the PK, and Rossi struck that PK. I loved it. Totally got the guy going the wrong way. I mean, Bingham's a quality keeper. Bingham really is a quality keeper. But he reminds me a lot of what Tim Howard must have felt like his last couple seasons in Major League Soccer. When you've got a porous front line, their start, Giancarlo Gonzalez was not in our starting lineup, but somehow was one of our best players on the field for Carson. I mean, running in the wrong direction, totally turned around by his guys. He looked terrible. So you get the PK, you draw back even, you think, all right, we're going to have a little bit of time to settle down. Nope, Pavone, he gets two cracks at it. I guess Cisniega got off his line early. I don't know. But we go down 2-1, come back again with Rossi right before – halftime, and that was huge because I think it allowed Bob Bradley to go into halftime and not have to kill everybody in the locker room. He could talk about some nice things because it was 0-0 at the half. I think that was important. And I also think, look, we knew Deion was coming out no matter what. He got a silly yellow in the first half, but some of those yellows that Carson picked up in the first half, I think it was what Insua picked up, an early yellow that was just such a boneheaded yellow because he's their one decently mobile defender back there trying to do some things, and now he can't play as aggressively over the course of the next 45 minutes. And what you saw was just that snowball really starting to roll downhill. What I love more than anything else, you guys probably don't know about the curse of the third DP that we have at LAFC. Andre Horta's very first touch for us was a beautiful pass to Carson basically lose us the derby that day. And so ever since then, we have been looking, wanting, waiting, wishing, hoping for something to come from our third DP. And unfortunately, Brian Rodriguez has given the fan base very, very little over the course of his entire time. I mean, his first ever appearance was to take out an injured Carlos Vela in a hamstring injury in the derby. So you're looking at a huge move just to get him onto the pitch, and he didn't score last season. And I'm sorry, he's playing in the attacking positions. He's got to score. Preseason, he scores 3 goals, and what I said on our podcast, those 3 goals were scored in front of no fans. So this should be perfect for him. Preseason, no fans, closed games. And what I loved about Brian Rodriguez on that goal in the 56th minute with Bradley Wright Phillips, where, he just finds his way, right? He has to nutmeg the guy on the shot, cheeky angle, beautiful goal. That was off of a Brian Rodriguez pass. And I think 6 months earlier at the start of the season, maybe even, he tries to go 1v1 with his man because he thinks he's younger, faster, bigger, better, stronger, and take his guy. But now he's working under the tutelage of a guy like Bradley Wright Phillips, and he knows the guy on the wing, he's only done this 109 times in his Major League Soccer career. He will figure it out. Beautiful pass by Brian Rodriguez, huge assist, and those are the things I think that are going to be so important from Brian Rodriguez because we saw that again. 75th minute, another long pass, Cifuentes to Brian Rodriguez to Diego Rossi. Love Diego Rossi. Oh my goodness. We have a chant for Diego Rossi in our stands. Scored the first goal against the Sounders, 11th minute. He's our guy. And it was just, you felt the momentum shift after that BWP goal. But then Rossi, after he scored, now we're up 2. You really felt like our teams kind of started to feel themselves a little bit for LAFC. You had, I didn't know that a couple guys had these clubs in their bags, but Mohamed Elmounir with that rocket of a shot. I mean, he took on 4 guys last year and scored a goal, so I guess I shouldn't be that surprised that he's got a rocket of a right foot that he can curl away from Bingham. But then we have 19-year-old Bryce Duke and Jose Cifuentes, these kids who just came up with us. I mean, Bryce Duke out of the U.S. Barca Academy looking pretty good. Cifuentes, one of those midfielders that we didn't know would get a lot of run because between Latif Blessing, Mark Anthony Kay, and Edward Atuesta, we feel like we're pretty solid, although Mark Anthony Kay hasn't had the best tournament at all so far. Cifuentes and Bryce Duke take these shots that are not only on goal, but they're rockets. And I just felt like our team started to feel themselves a little bit more. And of course, Rossi with the capper in the second minute of stoppage time, 6-2, absolutely demoralizing. And to not have Cheech out there, to not have Jonathan Dos Santos out there, I don't think it is a full picture at all of what Carson is going to look like. But man, did it look like Guillermo Barros-Guelotto wanted to be there any less? Every time they showed him, I mean, we put up a little GoFundMe, a little picture on our Twitter account if you want to check it out. It's he wants to go back to Argentina, man, and it's rough. they do not look good. I'm sorry. They do not look good with him right now on the back line. He doesn't have any help on defense. He needs some young defenders out there. Why? I think it's, is it Zubac or Zubac or whatever his name is out there? Yeah. He's a quality young kid. I want to see a little bit more of him. Efren Alvarez, you know, that kid was supposed to be the next big thing. He hasn't gotten a lot of big minutes. But LAFC, the fact that we've given up 5 goals in the first 2 matches is a little problematic. And I think that when you go up against some more quality than we've seen so far, I don't believe Houston or Carson are the quality of this tournament at all, then I think we're going to be in a little bit of trouble. But the one good thing is, without the reigning MLS MVP who happened to put 37 in the back of the net last year, to be able to put up a 6th spot on Carson of all teams, I think it bodes well for us with no Adama Diomande, no Adrian Perez, who's one of our better strikers off the bench. And now we're seeing it's the Diego Rossi show, but he's seeing contributions from guys like Brian Rodriguez and Bradley Wright Phillips and people who we didn't expect to contribute. So for me, you know, the fact that we outshot them never matters because they've found ways to beat us with 2 or 3 shots on goal. The fact that they had more fouls than we do, that's kind of the way we play. We're more of a finesse team. I mean, look, Diego Rossi is one of the classic divers in Major League Soccer. We know. We try between him and Latif. They like to go down a little bit, although Latif is the most fouled player on our squad. But what I really liked about this is we showed we can put 6 on the board without Carlos Vela. And I think we can do that against almost anybody. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens in our next match.
So a bunch of questions as we were going through. So first off, Andrew, you looked a little confused partway through. Did you know that teams are allowed 3 DP signings?
No, unreal. I was against the rules.
I saw you shaking your head in confusion.
I thought the only DPs you're allowed to have were academy players whose names were Alex Muil or Omir Fernandez. I thought that's how that worked.
Yep.
Is that not a thing?
I mean, Carson had 4 for a little bit, right? Carson somehow found a way to work that out with with Roman Alessandrini and that whole mess. So
the Red Bulls DPs, the Red Bulls DPs come in for $2 million, never see the field ever again, but they fit the system, so that's all that matters.
Fit the system.
Yeah,
I mean, they're better than Medina, though, right? So what can I say about that?
Fair. Well, we don't know because we've never seen Jorgensen play. So
I have seen him play a total of like 7 minutes. And oh, okay. He has looked
for the first team or for Red Bull 2?
Yes.
Okay.
We're not an investment.
Yeah.
He's not going to last. He does not have.
No.
He did not pan out the way they thought he was going to.
Second question for JR is, I get a lot of stick from my 2 co-hosts that I greatly prefer. It's not a close comparison. Zlatan is miles and miles and miles ahead of Chicharito.
Oh, it's not even close.
Thank you.
We don't give you stick for that. We give you for the fact that you bring up how bad Chicharito has been after 1 game here. That's what we gave you stick for.
So the question I wanted to ask is, as an LAFC fan in these kind of games,
yes,
who strikes more fear into your heart, seeing Chicharito up top or seeing Zlatan?
Oh, full disclosure, I was 7 feet away from him as he was warming up to come in for the first time down in Carson. That 4-3 match where he scored a goal that Tyler Miller is still looking for right now. That 40-yard strike. There, I've seen maybe 1 or 2 players, soccer players, in my lifetime where I have looked at and gone, that's different. That looks freakish. What's going on there? And Zlatan, and maybe it was because he was warming up right next to their number 2 overall draft pick that year, Thomas Hilliard Arce, who might be 5'4 on a good day, 145 pounds, right? So you have Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who's only scored 500 and some odd goals in his professional career, warming up against this kid who had his first facial hair 7 minutes earlier. And to watch Zlatan, just the way he warms up, the way he carries himself, the way he walked onto the pitch to take his seat on the bench, where we didn't even think we would see him. And then all of a sudden, 70th minute, he gets up. When he got up, it wasn't just the whole crowd that stopped what they were doing. Our back line on LAFC in that first game all looked over and went, okay, all right, here we go. And in that last goal where he heads in the match winner 4-3 after we were up 3-2, we were up 3-0, I believe, in that game. When he heads that in, I'm watching, and we had Laurent Simon, who up until that point, he was our guy, right? He was bulletproof. He was the general. He scored free kicks. He took headers from everywhere. he sized up. I watched the play. He sized up Laurent Simon and went, oh, yeah, this is not going to be a problem. And rose out of the air, headed in that ball. And from that moment on, I knew MLS doesn't have one of those. We have Carlos Vela, who might be the most skilled player maybe to ever even play in Major League Soccer. He is that talented. But in terms of a singular entity who could take over a game by himself, I don't believe the league has ever seen anything like Zlatan Ibrahimovic. So when you talk about striking fear, everyone knew walking in Zlatan was going to get his. But everyone also knew, look, Carlos Vela is also the only player to score in every derby except for that last one, right? So for me, Zlatan all day long. Chicha needs a system. Zlatan needs a soccer ball. That's the only thing that Zlatan needs. So I don't think Guillermo Barros-Skelotto wants to create a system for a player who he doesn't feel has the scoring ability that he used to. I think that Chicha's going to find a way to get a ton of goals. The run that he made in their first match, I thought that it was a very classic Chicha run. He found a space that MLS defenders don't normally occupy. He put it in the back of the net. I think that's something that's a very Chicha goal. But that wasn't off of a system. That was off of him doing things in the box. So if you're asking me, I don't think Chicha was the great signing. I think Chicha was the big name that Carson has always done well in signing. The only difference to me, in my opinion, David Beckham changed Major League Soccer. Robbie Keane was the best player in the league. Even Ashley Cole, who was an incredible defender, they did so well by their big names. Really, Steven Gerrard was the only one that didn't do a whole lot for Carson. And I think this is going to go down as, well, he was the big name. He sold a lot of jerseys. He did a lot of things. But I don't think he's going to bring the results on the pitch. So I'm not worried about Chicharito at all. I'm a lot more worried. I was a lot more worried, to be perfectly honest, about Christian Pavone coming into the season, because that kid's a super talent. But I don't think he's going to be there longer than this year either. So we'll see.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I was literally just shaking my head in agreement that entire time. I've said the same things before. I think you can count the number of games last season that Zlatan, the LA Galaxy, were losing because that back line is just a dumpster fire. Zlatan looked at his teammates and said, okay, just give me the ball. I got this. Like,
right.
Don't worry. Right. Chicharito doesn't have that swagger. He doesn't carry himself necessarily like that. I mean, he has more, you know, career accolades, European pedigree than that entire team put together.
Sure.
But he's not going to be the one to say, you know, just give him the ball and I'll do this. He's that classic, like you said, poacher, fox in the box, whatever you want to call him, who needs the support around him in order to do anything.
Right. Right. I mean, look at the passing numbers. When we played Carson with Zlatan, the highest percentage passing combination on Carson was David Bingham to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, because they would play hero ball and it'd be the deep pass the entire time. And you know what? He did it. It worked a lot.
Yeah, the next thing I wanted to ask while we were going through that is, there aren't many transfers in this league that I'm, like, visibly shocked at. The first one I can remember is Lloyd Sam going to DC, leaving Red Bull. I remember I saw that online and I was like, oh, that's really – like, as a Red Bull fan, I was really disappointed. Obviously, going to the rival, Lloyd Sam's a player. You know, I love seeing Walker Zimmerman leave. Granted, it was a boatload of money to you guys, but like, who signed off on that?
You know, it was apparently, as Nashville put it, they made us an offer we couldn't refuse, which I guess that was the case. I don't know, it was $350,000 in some allocation money and then some other stuff later on down the line. And for me, what he meant was such stability back there on the back line, especially the him pairing with Eddie Segura. Eddie Segura might be the most underrated defender in Major League Soccer. And I'm probably biased when I'm saying that, because I see him, you know, game in and game out. We call him Steady Eddie because he always seems to be in the right position. That first clearance when we gave up the own goal, that wasn't a great clearance there by Eddie Segura. It was kind of a very elaborate header that he tried to put out of the box. But Eddie Segura has been such a steady presence for us. But I think a lot of it came that he was also feeding off of the leadership of Walker Zimmerman back there. And it hurt so much to see Walker go, not just because of what he brought on the pitch, but also off the pitch. He was such a good guy, had a lot of fans, super friendly. I mean, you saw how he ingratiated himself to the Nashville community immediately. They put him front and center in front of all that they did. That trade, or that deal, I guess, that transfer just blew me away. I'm still not happy about it. Look, we talk about it all the time. I said it on our last episode, 105, that we just recorded. I miss Walker Zimmerman. Absolutely. And to me, when you are bringing in a Dejan Jakovic to take his minutes over completely, when you don't have someone waiting in the wings, look, Tristan Blackman has been solid, and I think he will be solid in this league, but I still think he's got a lot of seasoning to do first. Bringing in Andy Nahar. Andy Nahar is the Derrick Rose of Major League Soccer. Can't stay healthy, can't stay on the pitch. He's not even ready to play in this tournament right now, even though we brought him in there. I love Mohamed Elmounir, and I will be the first to say, when we traded Joao for Mohamed Elmounir, I didn't like it. This guy had just given up like 80-some-odd goals, right, for Orlando the season before. And watching him play, it took two games for me to love Mohamed Elmounir. But missing Walker Zimmerman, I think we have not yet recovered, and we don't know how to play without his leadership yet.
That back three, so Tyler Miller, Walker Zimmerman, and Segura, 23, I don't know how Walker, 22, 21, whatever Walker Zimmerman is, and Tyler Miller's young as well.
Right.
That could have been your back three for – 10 years like that. Sure. That's your dynasty back line coming off that ridiculous season you guys had where they were just locked down defensively. I mean, Andrew,
I'm with you.
Andrew and I have spoken about Diego Palacios to start the season, especially in that CONCACAF game where he got
didn't look good.
We felt bad for him.
he didn't look good. Now, Cheeky too. Well, Blackman, you know, Blackman looks really, really good right up until he doesn't, right? He has a couple of those plays where you're like, oof. But I will say, you know, with Cheeky, I think he's still getting used to the system. He came in so late last year. He hasn't quite been the player I thought he would be, to be perfectly honest. You know, we'll have to see what happens there. I don't know what they're doing with Blackman now. Like, is he going to be a wing defender? Or is it going to be Dejan Jakovic and Eddie Segura in the middle? Or is it Tristan taking some of those minutes? I don't know. What I do know is, you know, it's nice to have a team, a club, a franchise. You know, we look at ourselves as a club. You know, it really goes from the owners all the way on down. We're not a team. We're not a franchise. You know, we're a club. Mm-hmm. It's really nice to have a club that spends a lot of their money on offense, right? Because it's more fun to watch a game 5-3 than it is 1-0. But I would love to see what kind of commitment we're going to make long-term to our back line. I feel like with Latif Blessing and Marc-Anthony Kay and Edward Atuesta, for as long as we have those three, we're going to be really solid. And if we're bringing Jose Cifuentes, Pancho Ginella, Bryce Duke, I mean, we have quality in the midfield. I would put our midfield up against any team in Major League Soccer with the depth and quality of whoever we have out there on the pitch. Our back line, not so much. So we'll have to see what happens with our back line over the course of this tournament.
I mean, that's the thing, is you look at the 11 you guys had when you arguably should have won MLS Cup last year. I mean, right. That it was yours to lose. No one was stopping you with the form you're on. The back line was solid. I mean, you could have maybe improved on the outside backs, whatever.
Right.
Midfield was fantastic. And the forward line was stupid. I mean, it genuinely was unfair at points. I hated it. Andrew hated it. Connor hated it. It's not fair.
Right.
Can't have one goal. You can't have Carlos Vela scoring 200 goals in a season.
He tried.
I know. And he was close.
He did.
But you look at the team, you don't – I mean, dynasties don't necessarily exist in the sport. I mean, we had the Galaxy. We had that TFC team. But you guys were, you know, one, two players away from – just domination for at least the next 2 years, I think.
Sure. Sure. You know, it's tough because John Thorington, our general manager, has said from day one that we are a seller's team. Our goal is to buy young talent for cheap and, you know, coach them up, do the best we can. I mean, look at Diego Rossi is a prime example of that, right? We're hoping that Brian Rodriguez becomes a prime example of that, where we can sell and then put that money back into the team. But at the same time, it's hard. I'm an American sports fan, right? And I am spoiled when it comes to basketball. I'm a Lakers fan. So we have only won championships. You know, that's something that we are pretty good at. And we go out and we get the best guys and we keep the best guys. And we're not talking about good guys. We're talking about the Shaqs, the Kobes, the LeBrons. Like, we get the best player in the league and then pair him with the second best player in the league if we can. So to see this, I'm also a Mets fan. So I'm used to the exact opposite end of that spectrum, yeah, where we get them after they've done all of their good stuff. The Tom Glavins, the Warren Spahns, the, you know, those kind of guys. It's really fun to watch those things happen. But, you know, it's tough watching guys like Diego Rossi and Edward Atuesta play very, very well and go, well, we're not going to have them for very long. And to know that you have to replace them, but we have such talent on the front line. We have such talent in the midfield. We don't really have that yet. We haven't built that depth on the back line. We're hoping Cheeky can be that. I love Mohamed El-Munir. I think he might be a big part of our future moving forward. We'll see.
Yeah. Last point, and then we can move on, or Andrew and Connor can say stuff. But
this is just the Adam show.
Honestly,
I had a lot. I was literally just writing notes while JR was breaking that game down. The craziest thing to me for LAFC was watching that documentary that first year. The way you guys scouted and decided who you were going to sign before you kicked off was, I mean, I can't compliment that enough. You saw Bob Bradley write down, you know, like striker. And then he said, these are the five names we're looking at to fit the system. I want this guy. Like, he's my top choice because I know the way we want to play. How reasonable is this? And you guys broke it down and it looked like each position was just well thought out, planned for. Like, that's the way you want a team to look. I give a lot of crap to FC Cincinnati because they came into this league with 19 defenders.
And all of which came from USL.
Yeah, but again, you can't come into this league with no game plan other than to sit behind the ball and hopefully not lose every game 17-0.
Look at Miami. Same thing right now. Miami.
I was about to say, Adam, tell me about your new team's plan.
So we don't have one.
Exactly. I'm going to run through the notes that I was taking as well.
You could be here for the next 3 hours.
you mentioned Barros Schelotto looking awful. The way that he looked reminded me of Patrick Vieira when we beat him 7-0. That is the exact correlation I made. In terms of the PK callback, awful. As a goalkeeper, that hurt me in my soul. He was off the line by 6 inches. Allow it. BWP, greatest striker of all time. You will never convince me otherwise outside of maybe Thierry Henry if you want to go and call him the true striker, even though he played left wing most of his career in MLS. I like Cisniega. I really do. I know we were talking about goalkeepers before. Don't know what your thoughts on Vermeer are. Not a huge fan myself, personally.
So my thoughts on Vermeer are incomplete, right? Like, I'm a teacher, so I'll grade him incomplete. I don't think we've seen enough of either Pablo Cisniega or Kenneth Vermeer. I will say this. I've had the pleasure of being at practice a couple of times to watch Pablo take balls, and he hits the ground so violently hard every time that it's no wonder. I mean, he had a ruptured spleen before he came to LAFC, right? Like, he's done all kinds of damage to his body, and the kid is young, super young.
Yeah.
I don't know that he can withstand the kind of wear and tear that he puts on his body game in and game out, practice in and practice out, especially if you're going to trade Walker Zimmerman and have that back line be a little bit more porous. He's got to go all over the place. He's a violent goalkeeper in the way that he throws himself at that ball. And that's why, personally, that second PK, where if you watch the first one, he goes all out, he makes the save. He committed to that line. It didn't look like he committed to that line again, that second PK. He was going the same way, but if you watch that dive, go back and look at the second one. He takes a lot out of himself when he goes to ground on these balls. Incomplete on Kenneth Vermeer, incomplete on Pablo Cisniega. For me personally, I like the pedigree of Kenneth Vermeer in that he's played in Europe. He's played in some of the bigger leagues. So I want to see him first, but he's not the youngest guy either. So we'll see.
Gotcha. And then my final point, you keep talking about how good your midfield is. You don't have Sean Davis and Alex Mawile, though, so you are not the best midfield in the league. All right, cool. On that note.
I will respectfully disagree, but we will move on.
I had to throw that in there. We have a thing on this show where we have to hit quotas. Adam has to talk about Ali Adnan, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Trash FCC, and I have to bring up Alex Mawile at least once or twice an episode.
Nice.
We pick all of those. We can go on to our previews for week 3. And even though he just talked for about 4 hours, Adam is going to start us off with TFC New England.
I want to say TFC win this easily, but New England have been like actually not horrible. So we'll see what those two strikers for New England can do against that back line that we've basically torched the entire time. I mean, we want Io Akinola to just continue scoring. So TFC win this fairly easily. I'll say 3-1.
I don't know, man. New England know how to get points out of teams. They haven't played. Man, they can pick up points when they're needed. So I don't know about that. I think Uxa, Bo, this is the team that you look at and you're like, you know what? I don't rate you at all, but they still have the players to get stuff done. Do I think they're going to be world beaters? No. But I don't know if I see them rolling over easily to TFC because of that back line issue we talked about, right? Like, that back line is old and slow. Uxa is slow, but Bo is dynamic. You got, as Connor and I had mentioned, you have the Jesse Lingard of MLS in Diego Fagundes, who is apparently still 24 and going to be he's got loads of potential still, even though he's been playing for 9 years. You know, there's still a lot in there that can be better than what we think. You know, they picked up, you know, they know how to pick up points. Where they're sitting on four right now, right? They beat New England and they drew DC, right? So they can pick up points, and you got to be careful. Again, with TFC, I think you're going to have to watch. Again, Akinola, of course. Is Josie fit enough to come in and take minutes off of Akinola? Do you even put him in at this point? You know, lots of questions in there. But yeah, I think New England have enough that you can't just roll them over anymore. You know, I just don't know. I think I also put TFC winning, but I don't think it'll be easy. I think it's going to be like 1-1. They're going to get a goal in the 60th minute. TFC, it'll be 2-1, and they're going to press, maybe they'll get a third. But I think you got to give New England a little bit more credit than we have been recently. I don't know about anybody else here, but I think New England earns a little bit more respect than we've given them, because at this point, they're scheduled to go on.
I think you're bold for putting only a 1-1 scoreline in this game. This is going to be like 4-4 at least. I feel like I'm not convinced by either team's defense. And I'm actually very excited to see what Heal can do against Toronto's defense. I feel like he could pick them apart. And Gustavo Bo, if he puts a shooting boots on, who knows how many goals he can get in this game.
Yeah, I think Bruce's boys find a way. I think it's going to be 3-2, 4-3, something like that in this game for New England. And I think, you know, you mentioned it, though, about how Bruce figures out how to get points, right? I think Bruce is going to figure out how to slow down Akinola a little bit, because that's the momentum, right? That's where they're getting all their goals. That's where they're getting all their great play from right now. And I like New England. I'll take Bruce 3-2
in this one. Nice. Yeah, no, I think right now if – New England draw or win, they're guaranteed at least to go through on as a third place club. So you can't really sleep on them. But yeah, I'm gonna say it's closer. I think TFC do pull away, but that's because they're gonna nick one midway through the second half. Bruce is gonna have to push because they won't know the result of that Montreal game until later, and they really can't risk that. I think New England are through anyway. No matter what happens, I think they're through. I just think they want to get higher up than where they were.
Connor, speaking of ridiculous scorelines, I know you said it could be like 4-4, 4-3. I said the LA Galaxy, LAFC game was going to be 6-6, so I want half a point because I got one of those right. Pedro let me down.
You will get 0 points.
Damn it.
Because you called a tie. Disrespect.
I said it was going to be 6-6 or 0-0, so I was sort of right.
Talking about games that could end 6-6, it's not this next one we're going to talk about, but could end 6-0 with the way this back line's been playing and this attack has been playing. Connor, talk to us about your woeful Atlanta United taking on one of the best teams in the tournament, Columbus Crew.
Yeah, I don't want to sit here for hours on end talking about everything I dislike about this Atlanta team right now, but I'll kind of just keep it shorter. De Boer really needs to change the formation. This is just not the way to go. You can't play a 3-4-2-1 and play Eric Rimini and Jeff Lorena once as your midfielders, because nobody is giving the ball to the attack then. You had your guy last year, Darlington Nagbe. He was the perfect guy in the midfield for that, who could connect the defense and the attack and get things going, and you lost him. Then you maybe had a backup guy in Julian Gressel who could maybe do that, and you lost him. So now you have three defensive midfielders in this team, in Remedy, Lorenzo, it's Mo Adams, and then Emerson Hyman, which is just never going to work. That's just never going to work in this midfield. You have to change the formation. You have to do something different. I guarantee you he won't, and it's going to look like a mess again. We're going to score zero goals the entire tournament. Also, one other thing I wanted to mention, and I know we talked about it, I think, somewhere. I don't remember. It might have been off air. But why is George Bello not playing in this game? In the last game, sorry. Yeah. Why did George Bello not play? Why are you putting Jake Mulroney in when he gets sent off in 28 minutes or whatever? It's ridiculous. Bello was the best player on Atlanta, arguably. And then he didn't even make the subs. He's just gone. He must have sent him back to Atlanta. I don't know what he did. It was ridiculous. It makes no sense. I have zero hope for Atlanta to win this game, as much as I would like to. Columbus look like arguably the best team in the tournament, maybe with LAFC and, I don't know, the way Seattle looked the other game, they could be starting to get hot too. But Columbus look insanely good. This could be Columbus FCC bad. I think
this game to be Columbus FCC bad.
I think that DeBoer just needs to bite the bullet at this point. Change the formation. Try something different in this game. I mean, you can't go any lower than 0 points and zero goals. Just try something different. Please.
What do you change to then? Where would you go? Knowing the personnel that you have not playing, where do you go?
See, I would say with how many defensive midfielders they have in the team, they could have done a sit back and counterattack, but your problem is your front line attacker is Adam Yon, and he cannot counterattack. Maybe if you put, I don't know too much about Castro yet. I don't know if he's pacey at all. Maybe you could get away with Castro up there and do that, but I don't know what you would change it to. When I say a counterattack formation, maybe like a 4-3-3 with two defensive midfielders and then maybe Emerson Hyman in front of them with Barco, PD, and Castro up top, and then sit back, absorb the pressure, and hit on the counter when you can. But just try something. I don't know. Obviously you can't play Jake Mulroney at this point, but don't try to find a way to play Jake Mulroney if you can.
I'm still waiting for this guy to go a 4-3-2-1. Put whoever you want in the back four. I don't care. Put your three defensive mids you just mentioned sitting in there. Maybe play Emerson Hyman instead of Mo Adams, right? Go put PT and Barco directly behind Adam Yon. Use Adam Yon as your target man. Hold it up, lay it off, and then just run in behind him. I don't understand what's so hard about that. It's the personnel is there to play this way. It is Frank DeBoer's style because he's not exciting. He's not Tata. He's not, let's just get the ball and run. Let's use all of our pacey attacking players and run. He likes to slow the game down. He likes to keep the ball, possess it, play with the target man, play off him, and run. It's there. Just do it. And he's
I don't think they have the guys to do it. I feel like he had that with Nagby, but you don't have the guys in the midfield to control possession.
I disagree, man. If you look at – so your back line is your back line. You got Meza, you've got Robinson, you've got
– Escobar.
Escobar, yeah, and then – whoever you're going to play in left back. We'll play George Bello at left back, right? Let's have fun with it. Sit Remedy. Sit. Who's the other one you had?
Lorenowitz.
Don't sit Jeff Lorenowitz. Don't just put him
Mo Adams.
Far away. Put Jeff Lorenowitz so far. Put him on the other team bench. Put Mo Adams next to him because Mo Adams is a little bit more mobile than Remedy. Let Emerson Hyman play as a third central center mid that can go a little bit forward, more forward. Put Barco and Petey directly behind Adam Yon. Two number 10s directly behind Yon. Every time you get a chance to play, play directly to Adam Yon's feet. Have him take a touch, lay it off to two guys around there. Whichever way he doesn't go, the other guy runs behind and play through. It's a simple game. Football's a simple game, and it's right there to do it. I just don't understand why he doesn't.
Because it's Frank DeBoer.
You're right. Because Frank DeBoer. He's trying to break his record with Crystal Palace and scores zero goals in, like, the next nine games. Anybody else have thoughts? Because I'm all worked out.
I just think it's a shame to see what they are without Joseph and how there's no offensive continuity when, I mean, look, we're not talking about just any striker, right? We're talking about quite possibly the second best striker ever, maybe in Major League Soccer. I know you're a big BWP guy, but I think there could come a day where Joseph breaks the 100-goal mark and gives Wando a little run if he decides to stay here. But that team without Joseph, they just look like a shell of themselves. And I wanted to see more from Barco. I wanted to see more from some of these younger guys out there. But I don't know. Hey, play what's the kid? Tyler Wolf, the 17-year-old? Like, bring him on. Why not? He's 17. Let's see what he's got.
I think one thing that I was thinking about earlier too is like, you look at LAFC, and I think this is a testament to Bob Bradley and LAFC. They going into this tournament, they're losing their star attacker, Carlos Vela. He's not playing, and they've scored 9 goals, and they look great. Atlanta loses their star attacker, Yosef Martinez. They score 0 goals, and they look awful. You can clearly see the difference in the two systems.
Yeah. One more shout before we move on. Yosef Martinez, by the numbers and by the way he plays, is the single best striker in MLS history. He will not be here long enough to break BWP's or even get close to Wando's record. That dude's out of here in a year or two if he stays healthy.
I hope so. I mean, he's fun to watch. I will say he is real fun to watch. He is. We don't have a singular assassin in the league like him. I mean, he goes and gets his every chance he gets. And, you know, people give him a lot of grief because he had, 2 assists or something last year. And that's just not – it's not what he does. He is Carmelo Anthony, right? He's going to get 28 points, no rebounds, 1 assist, and 4 turnovers. But that's who he is. So I love watching Joseph play.
Oh, yeah. Great striker. And for a long time, I hated him because he was somebody we hadn't seen since BWP prolific-wise. Like, he just scored every time he touched the ball.
Right.
And I have slowly and surely come around after watching Brian White for so long that there is nobody like Yosef Martinez. Let's go ahead and jump on over to the West and talk about LAFC's final game against Portland. And I'll send that over to you, JR, to break that down and tell us what you're thinking, who you're watching.
Could be very interesting because Portland's already through. And we're basically already through, right? Like, there would have to be a lot to happen. It's like a 0.2% chance or whatever that we don't advance. So I think it all comes down to who Portland decides to start. If we start Bradley Wright Phillips, if we start our 11 who have been playing in this tournament, I think we're trying to win. I think we're trying to get the first one and then maybe park it. What we did at the end of that last game against Carson – all of a sudden, Latif and Mohamed Elmounir are both playing wingbacks, and we've got 5 defenders kind of dropping back, something that Bob really doesn't do all that often. We might see that a little bit. What I'm hoping for in this last match, I think it'll be first team that scores will sit back, whether that's us or Portland, and then I think that second team is going to just go to get an equalizer, do whatever they can, and then if they're able to get it to 1-1, you see both teams take their foot off the gas and say, okay, we've both given our best punches for a little bit. We're going to tone it down and not have anybody get hurt for the knockout round. Because at most, you could have 4 more games to play. And Orlando's awful right now. It's 80 degrees with 85% humidity. And no one wants to be doing that, especially Dejan Jakovic, Jordan Harvey, Bradley Wright Phillips. Like, a lot of our guys are 35 plus, right? So I'm looking at a 1-1 tie. I know it's terrible to predict. I hate sports that end in ties. I'm with you. But I'm looking at a 1-1 tie. If we go up, my other thing that I'm predicting, and I hope this, I know you guys might have seen this, right before the tournament started, we signed 3 16-year-old kids, our first ever homegrown signings, Eric Duenas, Tony Leone, and Christian Torres. One of those, Christian Torres, flew with us to the COVID Cup. So he is there in the bubble. I want to see this kid get his first minutes in Major League Soccer, 16 years old, our first product from our academy to come up and get significant minutes. It'd be really cool. He actually scored in preseason for us this year, which was kind of neat. So I'm hoping Christian Torres gets some run, and I'm hoping we see a little bit more of Bryce Duke. I think that kid's a lot of fun. But I'm predicting 1-1, and Portland will try to injure us in the first half, and when they're unsuccessful, we'll be able to get our subs in and water breaks and oranges for everybody.
We have, by the way, a 3-3 tie, a 2-2 tie, and a 3-1 LAFC win predicted.
Okay.
Score update, by the way. We've got 1-1 in Philadelphia, Orlando that's going on right now.
Everything just went crazy in that game.
Yeah, Mauricio Pereira and El Cino within the span of, like,
two minutes.
Yep. Yeah. So just an eye on that game right now. I believe Orlando's still topping the group.
How?
Orlando and San Jose on top of the group. This is awful.
Because Orlando's used to playing in the soup that they're playing in right now.
This is what we said, I think, last episode, was that what Orlando is doing right now is what Russia did in 2018. Nobody gave them a shot. Nobody thought they were going to do anything. They ran through their group stage. got, I think, to the round of 16 or the Elite Eight, if you whatever the, you know, the last eight in that tournament, Orlando can make a very similar run simply for the fact that they've got home field advantage, and it's disgusting. I hate it.
Wasn't it Korea in 2014, right? That they did the same thing. I mean, they're used to playing in front of this many fans. They're used to playing in front of this weather and this awful climate that they're playing in. This is perfect for Orlando. And look, I also think they've figured things out a little bit, right? And now you've had two or three breaks go their way. You've had a ball find the back of the net that shouldn't. I would love for Orlando to figure out a way to somehow make it past the knockout stage once or twice and really bother some people.
Yeah, I think you and about eight other people are in that same camp, so I hope you guys will have a good time. Speaking of teams that love playing in front of no fans, FCC, RBNY, only one of those teams actually fits that category. Yeah, you got to laugh at yourself sometimes when you support teams like this. But how freaking Metro would it be for us to get run by FCC, lose like 3-0, have Atlanta blow out Colorado, and we miss out on that next round? How Metro would that be?
It would be super Metro because Atlanta's not playing Colorado.
No, I said Columbus.
You did not say Columbus.
I definitely said Columbus.
I'm going to go with Colorado, unfortunately, on that one, Andrew.
All right, well, here's the thing. Everybody's kicked off the podcast. I'm in charge, and this is my show. Oh, I'm just kidding. However, when they play Columbus, they could still get blown out or blow somebody out. And we still are not mathematically safe, which is fantastic. I don't think it's going to happen. But I am really worried with RBNY. I've watched this team for 10 years now, and I don't remember the last time I've seen a team play so uninspired, so poor, with so little direction and so little game plan than they did against Columbus. It was just purely awful. How it was get the ball, kick it as far as you can, hope it finds Tom Barlow, who can hold it up against the center back, and then not lose it to Darlington Nagby running back to him. Which, if you watch Tom Barlow play, is not very good. If we're talking about the team in general, RBNY have played strikers in 4 games, and 0 goals have come from those 4 games from their strikers. You've had Flo score twice, Kyle Duncan scored, didn't score against RSL, didn't score against Columbus, and then scored 1 goal through Flo below again. So an attacking midfielder and a right back have been our 4 goals. And Royer is MIA. Our best player last year I've genuinely seen him touch the ball like 3 times. It's been brutal to watch. The back line looks okay, not great. They can get better. I like Pendant. I think he's been better than Segrist. I think Kyle Duncan's the real deal. Aaron Long is getting back from injury or whatever happened to him earlier in the season. And Amro Tarek is Amro Tarek, cult hero for Adam Tamborello in his fantasy team.
Fantastic.
But the biggest issue for us is that midfield, right? We've got this 4-2-2 system that basically leaves Sean Davis and Christian Caceres to run against 3 or sometimes 4 center midfielders. You know, you've got Columbus, who's got Nagby, who counts as like 6 midfielders anyway. And they just got worked against Columbus. And it's just the same thing every time, right? It's let's win the ball, kick it as far up the field as we can, and see if we can win the second ball. But the issue is we couldn't win the second ball because Darlington Nagby was always there. And the issue now is we're going up against a Cincinnati team that has Kendall Waston, who will win every single ball in the air. And then Madunyanin and Amaya, who are just going to sit back, pick it up, and ping it. And granted, 90% of the time, they're going to miss their target. But the other 10%, they're not. And they're going to go forward, and they're going to go attack us. And if we can't get going forward on this team, we're going to have issues. So we need to learn how to press them hard and press them like we did in game one and not take our foot off the pedal. Because that's what happened when we played them week one. We pressed them for the first half, went up 2-0, scored again early in the third, and then was like, okay, cool, 3 goals, let's sit back. And then by the 85th minute, they had 2 goals. And we're like, oh, great, this is going to be fun now. Whoever's up top needs to be better. White or Barlow or Velo or Royer, or I don't care who, but somebody needs to be better. Because it's unacceptable. It's just not good enough from our strikers, whether they need to hold the ball up, run off somebody. I don't know what the system is because apparently there are 2 strikers up there, but I never see Royer there. So it's just 1. And I never see them hold the ball up well enough. So it has to be better from them. And we really need to see what Davis and Caceres can do. This whole system works on them winning the ball after a press. If they can't win the ball, the system doesn't work. And if the system doesn't work, we're screwed. You saw them do it against Atlanta. And while Atlanta didn't have the strongest team, RBNY's team is not better than that Atlanta team they put out, and we beat them. But we're not – I'm not confident with this team because this team – FCC put two past us in week one. Like I said, keep an eye on Waston and Amir Madunyanin, but I don't think the system is going to fail that badly twice in a row. But here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say we're going to tie this game 1-1 because it's very metro, has not reared its very ugly head in a while, and it's due. But this scoreline also means that FCC gets to go through as a third-round team and Atlanta are knocked out no matter what happens. And that is what I want to see out of this group.
We have David Jensen and his mustache. So.
And his hat. We got to get his hat back.
That's he hasn't done both. We will win this. Both. They will win this game if he has the mustache and the hat combination.
I agree. Adam's very much not a fan of David Jensen's hat.
I don't mind it. Whatever. I don't care. Right. There are no rules at this point. We've well established that.
Yes, we have.
There is no normal.
Yeah. All right. Adam, Montreal has a word with you. What do you have to say to the team that has let us down twice in a row now?
Third time's a charm? Question mark? I don't know. Last and final chance for the Montreal fans listening. This is a DC team that I haven't seen a whole lot of, but from what I've heard and seen, they are not inspiring whatsoever. I mean, Julian Gressel is playing still number 10, left back, center mid. I don't know what he's doing, but I want to say Montreal can sort of pull this off. I mean, they looked a lot better against Toronto than they did the first game. So channeling some of that magic, you know, they may have enough to pull it off, but they can easily just as well play like they did the first game, and DC will run them over. So Montreal fans, this is for you. I'm going to go to back for your team again. This is the last and final straw. Don't let me down. Don't make me look stupid. I'm going to say 2-1 Montreal just because someone like Kyoto. Yeah, Kyoto and Arruti do something. They get some nonsense BS penalty or something and then just play kickball for 70 minutes and hold on to a result.
Do you want to see Thierry Henry change a formation? Do you want to see them be more attacking in this game? Because they need 3 points. They can't settle for a draw. They can't settle for a point. They need three.
I don't know. I mean, we've spoken on the show how vastly they missed Diallo in that back line. Oh, I mean, it's like night and day with him out there. They have enough quality to play a 4-3-3. So you look at like a Piet or a Lapalainen and a Taider as maybe a three-man midfield. And then you can put the Arruti or the Kyotos who like to drift out wide, so he can play that left wing now. And then you have, you know, the Boyans or whoever up top and figure out a right winger. I think they can switch it up. It's just that back line, you're now going from a 5 to a 4. If they were keeping clean sheets in a 5, I would say, you know, take the risk to go to a 4. But – I mean, they're giving up a ridiculous amount of goals as a 5. I'd say at a 6 if they could, but I don't know if that would even help. So I don't know.
So when I played for Alfred, we had an issue early in last season where we were leaking goals with a young team, and we went to 5 at the back, and it didn't really help.
Yeah.
And because we didn't play the right way to do it, and I don't think that Montreal are playing the right way to do it either. And what we did was we put two center mids in front of our back four, and it sorted everything. And I'm very curious to see if that's the way they should do this, because what are they doing? Are they doing a 5-4-1 right now? Is that their go-to?
5-3-2, yeah.
Yeah, so what I really want to see is, hell, can we even do a – if we're going to stay with five in the back, can we attack it as if we had – an NYC lineup where we have, you know, a central striker, two wingers, two central mids, and then the three center backs and the two wide backs. Can we do something like that? I think they're using Louis Banks wrong. They have him lined up as a center back. I don't like that. I think he's a wing back. I just I think there are a lot of things wrong with this. I think Wanyama as a center back is a good shout. I think they're plenty fine in the midfield in terms of talent, right? We got Piet, Maciel, and Taider. But can you find a way to get yourself more attacking? Because I understand the sit back and counter method with a team that isn't as skilled as, you know, the teams that Thierry Henry has played on before. But at some point, you got to go for it. And just sitting there waiting for it is not going
to
do it.
I mean, you don't necessarily have to. I mean, this sounds terrible, but if they go down a goal, like if DC get an early goal and it, you know, it doesn't look like whatever they do is working, just use this game as just to try something new. Let's, you know, change formation, do something. Whether you win the game or not is irrelevant. They're probably not going to go through even if they do win.
Right, and that's my point, right? Can you just send all caution to win and just say let's figure out a way to go forward a little bit more? Because, yeah. I mean, granted, you scored three goals last game. If you're going to ship four with five in the back and then you lost 1-0 in a boring game to New England the week before, your fans are going to be clawing their eyes out watching you play sit back and counter all day.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Anybody else with thoughts on Montreal?
I like their uniforms, but I don't have much thoughts on them moving forward. We'll see. I think Thierry's got a long way to go. Right now, he's still learning on the fly. So we'll see what happens at Montreal.
I texted Andrew. I said the black and gray, it looks really nice.
Very nice.
Those are very nice.
Yeah. I think it hurts that we are not allowed to talk bad about Montreal, though, because of, you know, we shafted them. They performed well in the first two games and in CCL. And then here we are.
Yeah.
Two games, 0 points, probably on their way out. But it is what it is. Two teams closer to the top of their group, SKC RSL, kind of right. Tell me a little bit about that.
I'm going to try to keep this short because I know
we're running for a while. 2 hours here. My goodness.
We're running on a long time. So.
Yeah, and Adam had an hour and a half of it. Sorry.
I'll try to keep this like short and concise. RSL, top of the group right now, have not conceded a goal the entire tournament.
That's wild.
One thing I will say, they have not faced a player like Alan Pulido thus far. So that can all change this game. I want to see more from Gadi Kinda. I want to see Kinda from the first two games before the pandemic, because if he comes back like that, SKC are going to win this game, I think, pretty easily, even with Sanchez in goal. Wait, or is Milia still suspended?
Yeah, I think so.
He's out for three, right?
Yeah.
He's out for three? Okay, so even with Sanchez in goal. Which, speaking of which, if Sanchez is in goal, which I fully expect to be, RSL will probably get at least a goal, maybe two. So Pulido and Gadi Kinda are going to have to get it together and score a bunch of goals for them. Otherwise, they're going to sit in this group with 3 points and have to hope that they can squeak through as a third-place team.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. JR, can you go ahead and talk to us about Houston versus Carson, please?
So Houston's got to be thinking about the old line from Dumb and Dumber, right? So you're saying there's a chance because they've seen this Carson team play these last two matches, and they've got to be thinking, all right, we got three on LAFC. We got to be able to figure this out. And for me, I'm thinking Houston is going to empty the arsenal on this one. Albert Elise is going to take 15 shots himself. We'll see a lot of hero ball. I'm not sure what we're going to get from Manotas. I think Minor Figueroa is going to get at least a yellow. We'll see what happens. And I think Houston always loves to play up against the LA teams, right? Because if you can beat a team from LA, and if you can beat the team that was quote unquote first to five since 96, you know, all the stars, right? You can beat the Sash, everything that goes on with Carson. Houston is going to be so ready for this game. They're going to feel like if they walk away with 3 points, they've at least put themselves in position to move on as one of the top, you know, what is it, the third place finishers or whatever. I think they've got a shot at that. I don't think it'll happen, but I think Houston goes into that match going, all right, if anything, we're going to take a piece of skin from that Carson squad, and they're going to not forget us for the rest of the season. Because if we have a season, this is something for Tab Ramos to build on, right? This is something for Tab Ramos to put in the locker room and say, look, you finished the job at least. It was a gauntlet. This is a tough, tough bracket. I'm not sure. A tough group, excuse me. I'm not sure that it's the group of death just because of the way that we've seen the Galaxy play. And Houston, not the best team out there. But if Houston can hold its head held high and say, all right, We got our win against Carson. Great. If I'm Carson in this match, I'm playing all the young kids. Get Efren Alvarez out there, Julian Araujo, all the young kids. Let's go. I don't want to see Perry Kitchen out there. I don't want to see Giancarlo Gonzalez out there. Keep LeJet out there because someone's got to be the babysitter, right? Someone's got to be able to find the ball in the midfield and get it to where it's got to go. But I want to see Zubac. I want to see these young kids because how much worse can you get if you're Carson at this point? It's that same thing you were talking about with Atlanta, right, where – let's just put something else different out there. Put something, if you're going to stick with the, 4-2-2-2, I think that they run, just let the young kids play. Let's see what they got. That's if I'm Carson, why not? You can't look any worse than you already have. So I'm predicting it to be a 3-1 Houston victory with that one coming on like a late PK that Carson earns. And I think it'll be like Efren Alvarez to take it. Cause why not? Let's get the hype train rolling on Efren Alvarez again.
As Mr. Doyle on MLS.com likes to say, hashtag play your kids. Let them go. Right? Let them run. Right. Absolutely. I'm all here for it, mainly because it's Red Bull's only model, along with hashtag sign zero DPs. So, second to last game, we'll talk Colorado-Minnesota. Up the Loons. I'm a big Loons guy. However, this would be a very interesting game because there are a lot of unknowns. Colorado playing without Danny Wilson, one of their center backs, and Jack Price, one of their better players, versus Minnesota, who Amaria stepped on the field last game. Great. Will he be back? This game could go anywhere. I think I originally predicted 2-2. Might need to change it. We talked about a lot about the starting 11 for Chicago, my goodness, Colorado, about how good they were, how excited we were. Never did we mention once anybody who would come off the bench. Their depth is non-existent. You're looking at maybe Quante Ford or 36-year-old Drew Moore to fill in at center back, and I genuinely don't know who's going to play center mid. I looked at their roster. I could not find a center midfielder on their roster, so I don't know what they're going to do. Then you've got Minnesota, who's got a team that's going to be pretty fully stocked if Almeria's back. Granted, you've got Tyler Miller playing like the Tyler Miller after that camp that we were speaking about earlier, and no Ikapara. There's just a lot going on here that I'm not super sure about. But the biggest thing for me is Jack Price is one of the best players on Colorado. It's not really a question, and losing him is big, and they have no true replacement. Minnesota might get Amaria back, so let's keep an eye on him, but not just because if he's going to get up to pace, but he's also just a lot of fun to watch. We saw him play against a lot of those weaker teams earlier on, and he torched them. So this weaker Colorado team could be fun to see him play against. Prediction-wise, I put 2-2 originally, but I wouldn't be shocked if Minnesota run it like 3-1. But just really looking at the guys that we want to watch are the fill-ins for Wilson and Price, the guys who got knocked. With the red cards, watch those guys because they're going to be the difference makers because those are two of the bigger players in this Colorado team. Good. Awesome. Chicago-Vancouver. Final game of the knockout stages. We can all put a little bit into this, but I'm going to send this to Adam because why not? Go ahead, Adam.
This game is going to be gross. Chicago is just going to be – it's going to be a peak MLS game where it genuinely could end like 5-5 because no one – wants to play any sort of defense, or it could be the biggest snooze fest known to man. I think Vancouver, I mean, we've spoken about, looked better last game. Chicago are a dumpster fire.
They absolutely are not.
You're gonna tell me that San Jose game against them was a good game?
No, but they're not a dumpster fire. You're comparing them to FCC.
Well, no, because compared to FCC, everyone's not a dumpster fire. But I watched that Chicago-San Jose game and just wasn't inspired by anything Chicago tried to do, like at all.
Yeah, I get that. Mate, they're going up. They need 1 point to be a solid third-place team against a team that's got a -4 goal differential and zero. Again, I think you're writing them off.
Maybe, but – and I know they'll be one of the better third-place teams, but – that's, I mean, that's probably a fair assessment of where the, how they've been playing. Like, they haven't blown anybody away. They haven't blown me away performance wise, and they've been just good enough to maybe scrape through. But I think as soon as you put them against anyone, like with any sort of semblance of a good style or a good performance, they fall apart. Whether or not Vancouver is going to do that, probably not.
I can tell you they're not.
Yeah, probably not. So we'll see. I mean, I obviously want Vancouver to do well in this game, but I think Chicago somehow grind out the result and just scrape into that third place. But then whoever they play in the knockout rounds, I think just obliterates them.
Yeah. So what I was getting at, right? You're talking about how Chicago against San Jose was a bad game to watch. Did you watch Vancouver against Seattle at all?
Yeah, it was bad.
Right. Was I'm pretty sure you had the Twitter again for that game. You were tweeting about how bad they were.
It was bad.
But you know exactly what they're going up against. I'm not worried at all. They've got zero strikers. They've got a back line that's questionable at best with a goalkeeper who's new now. You're playing a homegrown goalkeeper now because your starter's out.
He's 12.
Yeah, he looks like he's 12. My gosh, he's got zero muscle mass. He's got zero facial hair. The kid's
babyface assassin.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's. I think Vancouver's going to have a very difficult time with this, but that's just my
all right. So opinion. I'm going to throw something out. I'm going to say a sentence that I don't know that you heard very much last season. This game matters for Chicago.
Ew.
This game matters. They could move on in this tournament. I think that's huge. I think we see Chicago come out playing a really solid game. I think their starting 11 is much more solid than people give them credit for. I don't think they have any depth whatsoever, but I think that their starting 11, and you got a bunch of guys that literally got off of different planes right before the season and had to figure it out, right? I think that was it, the Barrich video. That might have been the most embarrassing DP video signing I've ever seen.
I'm sorry. Did you watch Jürgen Damm for Atlanta?
Oh yeah, that was pretty bad too. No, for sure. That was pretty bad. But I mean, that Barrich video where he like walks into a pub or whatever it is and like no one knew who he was. So I mean, it is what it is, right? But I think Chicago is really putting themselves in position to show well, which I don't know that any team needed that more than maybe FC Cincinnati, but I don't know any team needed that more. Their brand, everything about that has just been a dumpster fire. I think the one thing that isn't a dumpster fire is their 11 that they put out there right now. I think they're solid enough to maybe do some things in this knockout stage. I'm also going to say one other sentence that I never thought I would say again. Orlando is at the top of their group. That game just ended, yeah, by the way, 1-1, and they won their group.
It's disgusting.
Unbelievable.
That is all of our games. That is all of our previews. That is all of our predictions. That's all of our recaps. Everybody, thank you so much for getting this far. If you made it this far, I don't know how long this episode is going to be. My goodness, Connor's going to have a good time editing this one. He's going to need to sit down and really go through it with a fine-tooth comb because we are going to need to trim it down just a touch. But,
I mean, we're only 2 hours in. We can go for a couple more if you guys want.
We could sit here and talk all day. I am very certain that we can sit here and talk all day.
But
unfortunately, in terms of podcasts, we have to cut it off at some point. JR, thank you so much for joining us. This is fantastic. It's such a great time. Thank you for breaking down one of the best games of the weekend and previewing some of the really exciting ones coming up. This is usually a spot where we give you a chance to plug any of your social medias, personal or podcast related. So go right ahead.
Yeah, sure. So don't forget, check out our podcast, the most LAFC podcast on earth, Defenders of the Bank. We are 105 episodes in. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Defenders of the Bank. And the bank has a C because we're fancy like that with Bank of California Stadium. And on Twitter at Defend the Bank. So please check us out. And don't forget to follow us and all of our friends that we were on the podcast with today. Thank you guys again so much for having me. This was a great time.
Thank you so much for being here. Yeah, guys, make sure you're following us as well. Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, as we mentioned before, all with random handles because we couldn't find one that fit through all of them. But Instagram is designated_players_podcast. Twitter is at the DP Pod 1. Facebook is just the Designated Players Podcast. YouTube, the Designated Players Podcast. Make sure you go subscribe to us there. All of these are going to be cut into clips so you can watch all of our previews and predictions throughout the week, as well as our reactions to some of these great games. We're going to try some new things, hopefully in the future. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, but some live reactions coming up to games, possibly starting tomorrow. I don't know what schedules are looking like, but it could be really cool if we can get some live reactions, some good games. Lots of stuff in the works, but make sure you guys are subscribed. You can see all that coming coming when it does. And does anybody else have anything they want to add before we go? Alrighty. So I think that's it for us, guys. Thank you so much again, JR. Thanks again for being with us. This has been another episode of the Designated Players Podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode. See ya.